Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life. This is part two of our interview with Carol Sapiniak.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're joined by Carol Sapiniak, President of the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research. Carol brings more than three decades of experience in scientific research, teaching, and pharmaceutical sales, along with a deep commitment to bioethics and the protection of human dignity at every stage of life. Her work focuses on advocating for ethical biomedical research that respects both science and the inherent value of every human being. Carol, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you very much, Toni.
Why does NSER take a strong position against the use of fetal tissue obtained from elective abortions in research? Is it the same thing that we just kind of talked about, or is that...
Pretty much.
Yeah.
When you have ethical alternatives, why would you continue the atrocity against a child that's just been aborted and harvest its organs?
Yeah.
Because all that does with that money chain is actually pump up the abortion industry.
Yeah.
It actually supports it.
Yeah.
It's not about... Oh, well, it's going to be thrown out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if your foundation is rotten, nothing that comes out of it will be good.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point. Well, you said that this type of research treats the unborn child as an object rather than a person. Can you unpack what you mean by that?
Well, yes. I mean, people think that... and researchers, you know what this kind of reminds me of? Okay. I just got through talking about this on another radio station, and basically it was all about secular bioethics versus real bioethics.
Is there a difference?
There is a difference, as we can see in practice every day, unfortunately. So secular bioethics states that I can go ahead and abuse someone that's vulnerable in order to gain what I want.
Mm.
Now, sometimes, like the physicist in China who, showed us that he... could fool around with genes and change the life forever of three babies. Who knows what the adverse side effects will be?
Mm.
Because he had to confess that he had 36 undesired and random mutations from what he did. Okay. But you know what he really wanted? He really wanted to win a Nobel Prize.
Mm.
He did. Mm. I'm not kidding you.
Well.
Just like the guys who came up with IVF, he wanted to win a prize.
Mm.
So people want babies.
Yeah.
Dang it, I can't have a baby. And believe me, that is heartbreaking.
It
I have is. A sister who went through that. And this could fix it. This could fix it as long as you don't mind stomping on a fetus.
Mm.
Or how about 2.5 million fetuses that are sitting in freezers right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, unfortunately, that's the impetus.
Yeah.
That's utilitarianism.
Yeah.
That's believing that the end does justify the means for the people that I care for.
Yeah.
Which would be me, a scientist, or people who... want to have their own children instead of adapting.
Yeah, that's such a touchy subject.
I know it is. I know.
It's such a touchy subject. I know people that, have a strong desire to have children, and, it's always a tough family decision to decide what route to take. Because yes, sometimes they're blessed with that baby, but as you said, sometimes, you know, some people struggle with the eggs that were are frozen.
Yes.
Those frozen babies. What do you do with those?
And how about the fact that they literally examine each egg, yeah, and they process out the losers, the ones that aren't perfect.
Mm. Yeah, such a touchy subject. We're not going to touch on that today.
Yes, and please, can I add one more thing? My heart does go out, and I get it. And I'm not going to judge anybody on that.
Yeah.
Really, my judgment is left for the medical community.
Yeah.
Because according to their own bioethics, they should know better.
Yeah.
And here's what I would say. Could we make the process, number one, so that however amount are created are implanted and not reduced? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not genetically divided according to better ones and not so good ones.
Yeah.
If you could somehow deal with those kinds of ethical issues which directly are eugenic, then I would say, let's go for it.
Yeah.
I really would.
Yeah. Tough subject.
Sorry.
Tough subject. No. And maybe if we do that eugenics session, I'll have you back and we can talk about that a little bit. So
I don't mean to offend.
Oh, no, no.
I don't want to offend any mom or dad who's made that choice.
Yeah.
It is not up to me to judge them.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So a common argument is that fetal tissue research can lead to life-saving medical breakthroughs. How do you respond to those who say the ends actually do justify the means?
So basically, the only thing I could add would be embryos and the fetus and the full-term baby are a gift and a responsibility. And they are not to be used for any other purposes other than to be loved. Mm-hmm. To be cared for, to be protected. They're not playthings for our desires, and they're not commercial products.
Yeah.
They're living human beings, and we need to keep our focus on the fact that it's our responsibility that we treat them like the respect that they deserve as a gift from God.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So you also raised concerns. We kind of talked about it a bit ago about consent. Why is consent such a critical issue in this conversation, and why can't it be ethically obtained in those cases?
So we kind of talked about that too, but it's still very important to differentiate. For the mom, there's a crisis happening, whether the crisis is that she can't have a child or whether the crisis is she's not in a position that she believes she can care for a child. Yeah. And maybe she's being pressured from outside forces. We know that that happens. Mm-hmm. We know that economics affects what happens. Relationships affect what happens. So informed consent, then we go back to this whole concept of agency. Is she in a position where she really can understand all the implications of what's happening? The implications, by the way, to her own body.
Yeah.
Will she have future infertility? Mm-hmm. Will she have future cancers involved? Mm-hmm. Plenty of women we know for a fact, because there are beautiful ministries that minister to women who regret what they've done.
Yes.
Now, not all. Mm-hmm. Some of them are seared and they rejoice. Mm-hmm. It's unthinkable. Mm-hmm. It's not understandable. Mm-hmm. So now let's move to the fetus. Fetus never asked for any of this.
Yeah.
Every once in a while when I was little, I would have this fear of death come over me. I think it's because all those old people around me that I love so dearly were dying quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I would say, God, I didn't ask to be born. And, you know, you got to think about that.
Yeah.
They haven't asked.
Yeah.
They haven't asked to be torn apart limb by limb in the womb. Mm. They haven't asked to be have their organs harvested after they've come out of the womb. Mm. You know, they haven't asked to have their gene chromosomes, like in, you know, Hong Kong, that changed, physicist, to be played with, with who knows what the risks are. Yeah. They can never be asked. They can never give informed consent.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, too, the consent for, does a mom ever give, or the board of mom ever give consent for her baby's remains to be used in chemical or in medical research? I don't know that that's...
I think they might. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. If they're signing something off as they're having an abortion that... I mean, I've been in medical procedures before and they ask, can we use this for medical research? Yeah. I wonder if that's a question that the abortion providers ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Do you know, I think it is something they have to... But this is just my recollection. I could be wrong. But I think they are. But even so, it's not really informed consent.
No, still not. No, no. Because as you just described, even if I don't think she knows.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think she knows.
All the implications.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For her whole life.
Absolutely. Yes. I would totally 100% agree. Yes. Yeah.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby.
You're listening to Life Matters, where we have conversations that equip you to engage thoughtfully on issues of life in today's culture. Today's guest is Carol Sapaniak with the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research. We're discussing the ethics of biomedical research and what recent national changes mean for the future of science and human dignity. Stay with us as we continue this important conversation. Carol, recently there's been a major national development with the NIH withdrawing funding for research using newly obtained fetal tissue from elective abortions. Can you explain what changed and why it matters?
Okay, so it does matter, and it's a win for pro-life.
Okay.
But it's... a small win.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. It's temporary, depending on what administration gets back into the White House.
Right.
Number two, it only affects any research that is being funded by the government.
Mm.
So, yes, for example, UNMC is receiving like $100 million a year for research. They also are receiving over $200 million from people private. Like the Gates Foundation.
Yeah, private donations.
And so anything that's private, privately funded,
still funded.
Anything goes.
Yeah.
Anything goes. The sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. No restrictions or regulations.
Okay.
You know, come up with something that we can make money on.
Okay.
So that's why it is a win. And another reason why it's a win is because it has gotten people to pay attention. It changes culture.
Mm-hmm.
It emboldens pro-lifers who are serious about their mission.
Yeah. Yeah. So small change. Like you said, it's a small victory.
Small victory.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll take it.
Yeah, that's right.
What are the practical implications of that decision for researchers and institutions across the country? I think you kind of just said it. For those...
Right.
Certainly for people, I think it's brought awareness for people that... are listening to that. Okay, so the government is limiting that. What about private organizations? What private organizations do I support that, you know, would benefit? So those things. But do you think it makes a difference to those researchers and institutions across the country that are private? Does it put them on notice? Does it make them more, or does it make them more vigilant to do what they're doing?
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does. You know, I think... there's still a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of money in research. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And, you know, researchers are human, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been found many cases. It's become public where they change the way they do things or results that they come up with based upon wanting to get that grant money next, whatever the next grant money is.
Wow.
You better come up with a result that we like.
So you can get the next.
So that you can research. Keep your job.
Mm. That's dangerous.
It is.
That's
very dangerous.
From your perspective, is this a turning point on how our nation approaches biomedical research, or is there still a long way to go?
Long way to go. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, here in Nebraska, it really doesn't affect us very much. And I'll tell you why. UNMC doesn't do a lot of creating and destroying embryos. Okay. They're kind of out of that business.
Good.
And might I say, even though they did not like the physicians who started ENSER, it started with that.
Yeah.
It started with ENSER board of directors, all physicians, mostly physicians, some lawyers and so on, and ENSER informing the public of what's going on in their own university.
Okay.
And people started to make those phone calls, write, go online. I do it constantly, and I send out through ENSER and even personally an easy link, an easy phone number for my friends and relatives to call. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that's a big part of why UNMC is where it is. It's okay. It's not in a bad place. Yeah. It's definitely more pro-life.
Yeah.
Over the last 5 years than it's ever been.
Yeah. I have a very good friend and someone who goes to our church that's a vice chancellor at UNMC as well. So I believe his presence there is changing some things.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that. So glad.
Yeah. So compared to states like California or Massachusetts, where do you see Nebraska standing in terms of ethical research practices?
Well, I think UNMC is in a great position right now. They really have an opportunity to be. In fact, I actually I wrote one of my blogs about it. Just basically that they're in a position to really push and advance and perhaps be the leader in the country for ethical sources of tissues, whether it be, you know, synthetic or organelles or voluntarily submitted miscarriages and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's their opportunity. They've got a public here who wants that.
Yeah.
And we would do anything around the state, the pro-lifers, to support that. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking financially, you know, and there are other entities outside of Nebraska that would support that. They could become the leader in those ethical choices for doing their research.
Good.
And in many ways, it would be very advantageous, not just to UNMC financially, but to patients, because they could literally individualize treatment based upon using these ethical sources, as opposed to using embryos or fetal tissue.
Yeah.
So I feel very positive about that here in Nebraska.
Good.
And much better than, as you said, Massachusetts and California. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So we've mentioned ethical alternatives that are available, and you just kind of talked about a few of those. But, for example, how are adult stem cells, cord blood, and placenta tissue being used in ways that respect human life and still advance science?
Yes. So... umbilical cord cells, and let me tell you that we actually did this. Our firstborn, Jessica, when she had her first child, we had a company come and take her cord blood, her cord and her cord blood, and it's 10 years. Mm. It's being preserved.
Okay.
And I loved having that option, and I don't know if it's ever going to be needed, but I'm saying, what a cool thing to think about for your own children when they have their children, because that cord blood and umbilical cord could end up saving their lives, especially in terms of the new technology with CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing. They could use that to literally cure For example, right now, anyway, sickle cell anemia. Mm-hmm. Hmm. That has been done.
Okay.
It has been accomplished.
Wow.
And they're working on more complicated diseases as well. When it comes to placental tissue, it's the same thing. Okay. You get those genes, that DNA, as it's preserved, it can be used later, just like stem cells are and bone marrow, you know. Very successful so far.
Yeah.
When it comes to induced pluripotent stem cells, this is very ethical. This is taking adult cells, literally, and inducing them with chemicals to give them back their power to become any kind of cell in your body. And then you duplicate, you multiply those cells, and you position them in the appropriate treatment protocol to give somebody a weapon against any disease that's within them, to cure them. So these are very ethical.
What are some practical ways people can get involved or make their voices heard on that, on this issue here in Nebraska?
Well, like I always say, sign up to receive the e-blast from Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research by going to ethicalresearch.net, shameless plug, because you will be kept up to date on what's going on.
Okay, good.
Also, you know, Children of God for Life, Charlotte Logier. Most people don't even know about Charlotte Logier, and it's a fantastic entity of education. And they help make legislation in Washington. I mean, you know, so be well read, you know. Also, always let your voice be known. I know it's a pain in the neck, but now with email, it's so easy. Look up your senator, your representatives. Look up the folks in Lincoln. You can send them a quick text, email. Go on their Facebook page and send them a quick. I mean, let them, you may think it might not be making a difference, but I know for a fact by insiders that they keep track. They keep count. So we need to do that.
Absolutely.
To your kids about it, by the way.
Yes.
Talk to your kids about all this.
Yeah.
You see a science fiction movie where something like this was going on, like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, even now.
Yeah.
And you go, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's happening right
now. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I was just having a conversation with someone today, and we were talking about how you bring those topics up in an age-appropriate way. I think my kids had a lot of life lessons, whether it was about abortion or just life issues in general. It can be age appropriate.
Yes.
And if we don't start talking to them now, they're going to hear it from someplace else in a totally different way.
Twisted.
Absolutely.
Be twisted.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. All right. As you look to the future, what gives you hope when it comes to the direction of biomedical research and the protection of human dignity? What gives you hope?
People, the Lord and people. Yeah. Trust in God. And seeing the passion of people all around the country and all around the world.
Yeah.
Because now I am in connection with different pro-life entities in other parts of the world. And it's easy to just stay in your lane and think it's all about America, but the whole world.
Right.
Cultures are waking up to the devastation that transhumanism as a driving force for this technology can produce. They're waking up to this. And of course, transhumanism would be above trans, trying to get above something from one to another, from human to superhuman, you know. And this is not beneficial for humanity. It may be beneficial for the elite few. And that's why they want it. But it's not going to be beneficial for humanity in general. And it may even end humanity because of the carelessness of not taking into consideration endpoints that could happen. So, but I do feel positive about the passion that I see in people who are pro-life around the world.
Yeah.
And I do believe it's making a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I believe it is light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that light is going to take over all the darkness.
Yeah.
That's what light does.
Yeah.
Dark doesn't exist
mm-hmm.
unless it's compared to light.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, a little bit of light dispels the dark.
That's right.
Yes. All right, Carol, one more time. Tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about your work and the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research.
So our website is called Ethical Research, no space in between, just ethicalresearch.net. And you can find out about us. You can sign up to receive. We send an e-blast about once a quarter.
Yeah.
With all the new information, we're not going to bug you or ask you for money. We're not going to do that. In this case, I'm speaking the truth. You know, what we do is very organic. It's all volunteer.
Mm.
No one's paid.
Wow.
We are passionate about protecting the most vulnerable and allowing human beings to receive the kind of respect and dignity that they are created to receive.
Yeah. At any age, stage, and ability.
That's right.
Amen. Amen. Carol, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your insight and expertise on such an important and complex issue. We're grateful for the work you're doing to advocate for both ethical science and the dignity of every human life. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. You can also find information on our website about how you can partner with us in the life-saving work of Assure. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.